This program is brought to you by Haymarket Books as part of the Socialism 2024 program. You can hear more recordings from the conference by subscribing to the Socialism Conference podcast feed. Many video recordings are also available at socialismconference.org. If you enjoy these recordings, you should join us at Socialism 2025, which will be held in Chicago next summer, July 3rd through the 6th, 2025. If you are ready to put ideas into action and get organized with others from across the country and the world, make a plan with your organization and your friends to come to the Socialism Conference.
Bojo Kinawaya, Kitiga Bajuna Denawema, Kiniga Chi Anishinaabek Ogaming Ndonjaba, Ngojawani Megwa Dota, Bidasmusake Ndijinakaz, Nigichin Nendam, Gibijayan, Gibim Wachinguk, Mompi, Ga, Jigak, Wan, Jikang, Nigwech. Day 330. As we all know, this present moment, one of climate catastrophe, of ongoing genocide in Nakba in Gaza, Palestine, of genocides in the Sudan and Congo, demands that we direct our dreams and actions towards making worlds that refuse capitalism and dispossession and the spectacular violences required to maintain them. As everyone in this room knows, this present moment demands that we figure out how to create and maintain robust constellations of co-resistance and provide material support for anti-colonial movements locally and globally. As we all know, the access of capital and the states protecting that capital are descending deeper into fascism in the global north. And the present moment demands that we come together and face our linked crises in manners that ensures the sanctity of the planet for all species and the generations yet to come. As Noura Erkat said here last night, Palestinians are the canary in the coal mine for what is coming for everyone. As Abdel Raza Taritit reminded us last night, Palestinians have been in struggle for centuries, have used every tactic, every idea, and forged relationships with every major anti-colonial struggle because anti-colonialism is a long-term commitment. As Linda Sarsour reminded us last night, she wakes up disappointed. So today, I want to use our time together as a kind of anti-colonial refuge, where we breathe and think and dream together and separately about the worlds we are making in our movements and the worlds we want to live in. I'm going to share some of my thinking and dreaming, which will be coming out in a book from Haymarket this spring called Theory of Water. In the final chapter of my book, Rehearsals for Living, in the last letter to my co-author, Robin Maynard, I began to think about water, or NIBI, as a theory or a mapping of indigenous internationalisms. I became interested in thinking alongside water as it traveled the globe over and over, moving inside and outside bodies across all kinds of borders, and as it changed from solid to liquid to gas. I remain interested in its continual movement and cycling, its immense relationships with all forms of life on the planet. In the face of ongoing dispossession, indigenous peoples have written much about the importance of land to our continued existence. Land and land-based practices are the nest within which we learn our philosophies, our ethics, and our politics. And while water is, in this context, considered to be an integral part of the land, I became interested in the theories that water, in and of itself, hold for living, organizing, and making worlds beyond the ones we've inherited from colonialism and capitalism. These theories of water ask us to think on a scale that is outside of the present moment and our own immediate needs. I'm thinking about NIBI as a theory here because NIBI offers us an invitation to learn from its embodied practice, a practice of cycling that is global, is permeable, and brings about a continuous rebirth on our planet. NIBI asks us to ground ourselves intimately in land and place and relate that grounding to other movements, geographies, cultures, and lands. The shorelines of our lands, shaped by water, teach us about fractals, patterns repeated across scales, and show Anishinaabe that the same practices we engage with within our families are the practices we engage with as nations and in the larger universe. It teaches us that our thinking is most powerful when we can connect the intimate to the global and move between scales effortlessly. NIBI is iterative, resilient, and transformative as it carves out spaces from rock over thousands of years. And water, NIBI, is interdependent and decentralized, a vessel for multitudes of land and water-based species and communities. NIBI always creates more possibilities. NIBI works within Minobamadzuin to protect, propel a continuous global rebirth. NIBI, like all Anishinaabe theories, is an emergent theory of internationalism. Water's practices on a small scale are replicated on a large scale. NIBI works with and asks us to embrace uncertainty, multiplicity, adaptation, iteration, and decentralization as forces that create the conditions for life to emerge and continue. NIBI is inside us, and it connects us to all forms of life on the planet. Today, we are gathered on the shore of Lake Michigan, or Michigamin, part of a family of five lakes. This family that we all belong to is 14,000 years old. Their parents were ice, a spectacular sheet of ice that covered most of so-called Canada and a large part of the northern so-called United States. As their parents melted into them, they carved five basins into the land, filled each basin with the ice's miraculous transformation into water. These are the Great Lakes, Nayano, Nibimong, Gichigaming, and they hold 21% of the Earth's fresh water and 84% of the continent's fresh water. They hold the largest freshwater reserve on Earth, so much fresh water that it could cover all of North America to a depth of 10 feet. My people know that this family is the internal organs of the Earth, filtering and cleaning water from the sky, the rivers, and the snow through four lakes, and then finally to Chinabish, or Lake Ontario, where I live, which sends the water down Gitche Zibing, or the St. Lawrence River, connecting it to every ocean and every drop of water on the planet since the beginning of time. There are 3,500 different species that live in the Great Lakes Basin, plus an additional 200 species of birds that migrate through the region in the fall and again in the spring, commuting from the tundra and boreal forests in the north to points in the south. There are 17,000 kilometers of shoreline in the Great Lakes. What do these shores, these overlapping worlds of sky, of land, of water, teach us about weaving ourselves into the families we find ourselves in? I'm going to share today three excerpts from the book Theory of Water. The first excerpt is an origin story. I first learned it orally from Doug Williams, who is an elder from Curve Lake First Nation. And he has a written version of it in his book, which is called Michisagig Anishinaabek, This Is Our Territory. This story starts with Jouet Manadeau. Jouer Manado is a benevolent energy that loves living things unconditionally. Jouer Manado is at the same time all genders and none at all. The precursor to life, to world building, wasn't simply a plan or a campaign or an action or even an intention of something better. It was love. Not a fleeting romantic notion, but a deep sense of care, hope, truth, and kindness, a loving anyway and all the ways. Before the idea of the world, the inspiration, the know-how, the intercommunal creations, there was care and there was love. Love is the necessary precursor to world building. I understand love encoded in the word jouer as being unconditional. It is an organizing force, emotion, an ethic of caring, a communal love, not bound up in the individual or with the romantic, but love as an ethic that is animated within our relations and from there propels customs of kindness and generates empathy and systems of care for all forms of life that make up our world. It is not a structure that negates emotions or normal responses to the violence of colonialism, responses that might include anger and resentment or even violence. Love in this form is a reenactment, and like all such practices, it can be wholeheartedly manipulated and exploited under colonial rule. It can be conditioned and manipulated and weaponized, but it is also an organizing force, an architecture in the Anishinaabe cosmos, one amongst many other organizing forces, but an organizing force nonetheless. Jouer Manado, this unconditional love, had a dream. They dreamt the world, the physical one we know today, with the oceans and the rivers and the forests and the deserts and the mountains and the glaciers, the plants and animals and the humans. With dreams and responsibilities come responsibilities. So Jouer Manado knew they had to make it happen. And the first time the earth happened and everything was created instantly and everything was beautiful. This went on for a long time. Everyone was getting along, and in Anishinaabe Mo'en we call it Kina Bamadzawin. Everyone was kind. But the peace didn't last, and one day things started to go very wrong. Everything died off, and no one knew why. It could be that life is not that easy to keep. It could be that life is fragile. It could be that in making life, we don't always get it right. It could be that in isolation, no individual and no community has the knowledge we need to build an entire world. It could be that world making is struggle. Most things died off. All the earthbound life died and was gone. Only the sun and the great waters were saved. This bothered Jouer Manado. They were upset. This resonates with me sitting on the edge of climate collapse, apartheid, genocides, and overwhelming world endings. I'm imagining Indigiqueer Jouer Manado in the sky world, scrolling on their phone, watching Netflix, in bed, under a weighted blanket, feeling bothered because their dream got into trouble. But Jouer Manado doesn't stay in this place for very long. The spirits that lived in the sky went to Jouer Manado and they asked if they could help. The first time Jouer Manado created the world and they did it alone and it didn't work. Jouer Manado was in no state to go back to the earth and try again, so they offered help and Jouer Manado agreed. They asked another spirit who was different in character and work to try, and that spirit was Gijigo Kwe, or Sky Woman. So Sky Woman goes down to the earth to see if creation can be repaired. Gijigo Kwe's work was not easy. The first time she tried, her two children died and she was consumed by grief. Something was not working right and Jouer Manado's dream wasn't coming together. Gijigo Kwe went back to the Sky World to visit with Jouer Manado and try and figure out what happened. I imagine the two felt a deep despair, having both tried and failed. They were now both grieving, perhaps stuck in the fog of bereavement, unable to see clearly. In the meantime, back on Earth, a great flood happened, covering the Earth with water, washing over and nurturing the land, and changing the physical surface of the Earth. Nibi saw the problem and did the work that only they could do in hopes that it would move things along. Now, Nibi didn't have to act. Nibi was thinking beyond themselves and beyond their responsibilities. Nibi was living in kindness, witnessing and empathizing the struggle of both Jouer Manado and Gijigo Kwe. They were witnessing and listening beyond themselves and towards a new collectivity. They listened and they responded to the present moment. Within Anishinaabe world, making water is crucial. For humans, we first exist in a water world, a world that meets our needs, and we learn what it feels like to be safe. The water I breathe in becomes a constituent that makes up most of my body. Water that I breathe out becomes part of someone else's body. Water travels the world over, moving easily through land, air, soil, rocks, and body. Said in another way, Nibi continually violates the home spaces of everything on the planet. It might take a very, very long time, but Nibi always escapes the container. Nibi reminds us that we can build all the enclosures we want, including our own bodies, but there are world-making forces building and maintaining the planet that are planetary, that are beyond us. In fact, if Nibi is enclosed, they work away, seemingly gently, incredibly persistently, and unsuspecting until the enclosure is eroded away and an undercut or an arch or a hole appears as chasm and rupture. Nibi never gives up. They keep at it in the beginning when it seems absolutely impossible, through the years of seeing absolutely no progress, to the point where they think they might be imagining or wishing a transformation, through the hopelessness of incremental change, until finally, after everyone but Nibi has given up, across an incomprehensible time frame for living things, a miraculous rupture appears. Perhaps world making is the practice of communal struggle. Jouer Manado and Gijigo Kwe continued their visit in the Sky World. They comforted each other. Jouer Manado encouraged her and told her not to give up, to keep trying. Gijigo Kwe eventually makes the decision to go back to the Earth and keep trying. She encounters Nibi's flood, a catastrophic upheaval that has left the world in a completely different place than when she was last there. Here is the world. It's only water. There is no land back because there are no homelands. There are no humans. In time, Gijigo Kwe found animals in the water that had survived the flood because they could swim or fly, loons, beavers, and muskrats. Chi-Miknak, or snapping turtle, came to the surface and offered Gijigo Kwe a place to land and rest. The animals Gijigo Kwe found needed help. They needed care. They also needed a place to rest because they had been swimming or flying endlessly for days. Maybe they weren't even thinking about making a world at this point. Maybe they were only thinking of caring for the ones that were near exhaustion. Maybe they worked together to meet the material needs of their immediate community, which was a place to rest, each being giving up what they could to support the others. Gijigo Kwe rested on the back of the turtle with the beavers and the muskrats and the other animals, a communal place of refuge. Over time, Gijigo Kwe noticed the design on the turtle's back. She ran her finger around the rim of the shell and felt its meaning. 13 parts in the middle, 28 parts around the edge. She felt its meaning because her body cycled each moon, and her body's practice of cycles enabled her to see the moon cycles on the turtle's back. The turtle shell was a map of cycles, 13 moons, 28 days each, and turtles still carry that map today, as does the moon, as do people who menstruate. The turtle was showing her that what was missing in Jouer Manadeau's previous design was cycling and renewal. Not even Jouer Manadeau is perfect, because the job of Jouer Manadeau isn't perfection. The job of Jouer Manadeau is unconditional love. After a while, the loon, a bird that could swim and float, offered to dive to the bottom. The loon was gone for a very long time and finally floated to the surface, drowned. The loon had tried so hard, it had died trying. Same with the otter, same with the beaver. Next came muskrat. Same thing, tried too hard and floated to the surface. But when muskrat floated to the surface, Gijgo Kwe noticed they had a handful of earth. She put that handful of earth onto the turtle's back and grew it into mountains and streams and lakes, and then into clouds and wind and rain and trees and beautiful animals, and this world was created. Sometimes there is a larger benefit to others in plowing through. Gijgo Kwe went back to the sky world, and she became the moon. She became the one to watch over and regulate the cycles needed to bring forth more life on Earth. Her form cycles, and she visually reflects through her phases the cyclical nature of the universe. Some people call her grandmother, others Dibigizis, the night sun. We were given the responsibility of Minobamadzuin, of living in a way that contributes to the continuous rebirth of all living things on the planet. We were given the responsibility to not remake the world, but to fit into the complex networks of interconnection and interdependence of the ecosystems that make up the planet. Excerpt 2. Jackson Creek is a creek down the street from where I live in Peterborough, Ontario. It flows into the man-made Little Lake and then into the Otonabee River and eventually into Lake Ontario. There is a 4.5 kilometer trail along the creek that I run on in the spring and summer, and the parts of the winter I can't ski. Jackson Creek is, by most accounts, an unremarkable urban creek. I imagine much like every other urban creek in North America, and it's the body of water I spend the most time with. Today, the creek is beginning to freeze. After the first big snowstorm of the winter brought nearly 30 centimeters of snow to us. I was up early today on the snowmobile doing passes along the trail, compacting the heavy wet snow so that possibly tomorrow another driver could attach the groomer. I started helping groom the ski trail during one of the pandemic winters. I volunteered at first just to keep my snowmobile skills up when I'm in the south, so that when I return to work in the north, I don't have to relearn how to drive the sled every time. Grooming certainly helped with that, but those technical skills were eclipsed by something else. Nearly every day, the snow was slightly different along the trail at Jackson Creek. I became drawn to the process of sintering. When a snowflake falls from the sky and lands on the earth, it immediately begins, or perhaps continues, to transform as it forms bonds at temperatures below zero. So this isn't a melting process. It forms bonds with its neighboring snowflakes or crystals to create the fabric of a snowpack. Sintering is a joining process, a transformative communal process that creates a fabric of former snowflakes bonded to each other. It is a process of changing from a singular, angular snowflake to a more rounded form in formation of bonded crystals or a snowpack, a denser, more compact, linked formation. As the snow sinters, It settles, it becomes denser, stronger, saggier under the influence of gravity. Sintering is slow deformation. As a groomer, there are lots of factors that influence the sintering process: temperature, humidity, time, day, weather, who is using the trail, and how. I think of none of this each morning I'm on the sled. I think only of this idea that the first thing a snowflake does when it falls to the land from the sky world is to join bonds, actual physical bonds, with its neighbors. Snowflakes weave themselves into their environment in a way that doesn't destroy their neighbors and in a way that doesn't destroy themselves. Sintering is bonding, building coalitions with your neighbors. And those coalitions mean that the packed, sintered snow on the trail has staying power and remains long after spring has melted the snow around it. Snowflakes start out as a single nucleated dust particle that attracts water droplets that in turn freeze and accrete into a crystal form. The temperature and humidity in the sky world mold it into complex shapes as it moves through the atmosphere. No two are the same, and when they act en masse and in commune, they form magnificent storms, upheavals, and blankets. And when they arrive in their new environment, the first thing they do is center. The first thing they do is belong. Excerpt 3, the one who cleans the world. Nibby, the one that cleans the world, that one that does the unglamorous, underappreciated, unseen labor of washing and tidying up, the work that no one else will do. Nibby, the blood of the planet merging through subterranean and atmospheric vessels and circuitry. Nayano Nibby Mongichigaming, the Great Lakes, the heart, the lungs, the kidneys and liver pumping, mixing, detoxing, carrying the past to the future. Nibby as medicine, a daily streaming for our circumnavigation. When our elders say water is sacred, they mean its work is on a scale beyond our comprehension. They mean Nibby is not disposable. Nibby is not capital. Nibby is a provocateur enacting a theory in a body of knowledge about how to live inside the cacophony of living. She carries the water. I carry the ice. You carry the ocean. She carries a glacier. They carry the snow. He carries a march. Her carries the breath, it carries the spring. We, excluding them, carry the waterfall. We, including them, carry the waves. And while in this moment, Nibby might be hurt, horribly contaminated and reeling from the ongoing assaults of capitalism, left alone, we believe, as many other indigenous peoples do, Nibby will eventually revive itself, filtering, regenerating and renewing is already threaded through the web. Nibby may take a very long time and require an absolute rewiring of humanity, but we believe Nibby regenerates. Nibby and its unquenchable thirst for Minobamadzuin lives in resistance to disposability, despite being bought and sold, drained and contained, diverted and dammed. Nibby is a fugitive, raining down a quest for renewal, cycling through time and across every border. Nibby is speaking through action, critiquing by making an alternative. Nibby's theory, the theory of water, is a scathing indictment of every part of the death machine that has led to this present moment. Nibby rains down on capitalist scaffoldings, revealing captured beings who are separated from the network of life, their value in terms of capital extracted, their bodies withering into disposability, spruce, pine, hemlock, and Douglas fir, their woody bodies destroyed into lumber or pulp. Prairies tortured into farmland, rivers incarcerated into hydroelectric dams, land confiscated into highways, roads, pipelines, railways, housing, golf course and parks, gold, silver, nickel, copper, copper, zinc, lead, zinc, iron, molybdenum, uranium, potash, and diamonds captured and mined, shale arrested into oil, gas, and bitumen, salmon, herring, halibut, dispossessed from oceans. What is left is fire, smoke, flood, and catastrophe, collapsing ecosystems with cascading, magnifying collateral death. Anishinaabe grandparents held on to things, twist ties, tiny pieces of fishing line, scraps of materials, buttons, cardboard, plastic food containers, newspapers, old cars and snowmobiles, 1 liter milk bags, all bags actually, elastic bands, jars, cans, I could go on and on. Anything that was designed for one use and still is washed, taped, or dried and used again and again. Something not useful in the moment may be useful in the future to repair, to fix, to recycle, or to reuse in some way. Part of this habit was motivated by poverty, but part of it was motivated by love. The river runs through my body and tells the story of my existence. The one that cleans the world runs through me and reveals the story of my existence, these plastic bands. What happens when we write the analysis of what capitalism is and how it works from the perspective of those who caretake the world, from the point of view of hunters and trappers and those that tan moose hides, from the positions of those missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls and Two-Spirit and queer people, and those people who are the targets of the most severe forms of colonial violence? What do we learn when we recenter the analysis of capitalism from the knowledge of those Indigenous women, Two-Spirit and queer people whose lands, bodies, lives, languages, knowledge systems, and spiritualities were stolen, whose children, parents, grandchildren, and grandparents were stolen, who live with housing and food insecurity, limited access to health care, and diminished joy, whose lives were stolen, eliminated, made invisible, or shrunk so that the lives of white bourgeoisie women around the world are comfortable. We learned what our ancestors lived, that capitalism is incommensurable with Indigenous life. Our river is flowing from my eyes. Our river in my body, shattered into dams and lift locks, pipes and plumbing, pools and sprinklers, is flowing from my eyes. We must go until we smell the black root wet anchoring the river's mud banks. We must go beyond, beyond to a place where we have never been, the center, where there is no center, beyond towards what does not need us, makes us. That's from Natalie Diaz. To unseparate, to beyond, to bewards, to braid with land and sky, to blue, to shimmer, to mouth into again, towards what does not need us, yet makes us again. Miigwech.
Thanks for listening. If you like this episode, subscribe to our podcast and to the Haymarket Books YouTube channel, where events like this one are hosted live. And don't forget to check out haymarketbooks.org.